This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Good morning, everyone. We will begin Senate State Affairs this morning. I ask anyone who's going to do handouts to please use the pages, and if you're going to testify, to please sign in the back. This time I'll ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Boland? Excused. Greenfield?
Here.
Kennedy?
Here.
Nezeba?
Here.
Novstrup?
Here.
Schoenbeck? Youngberg?
Here.
Langer?
Here.
Klum?
Here.
We have a quorum. I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting.
So moved.
It's moved by Langer, seconded by Youngberg. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. At this time, we'll ask our pages to come up. Looks like we lost one already. At least come up and introduce yourself, say where you're from, and what your plans are for the future.
My name is Matthias Olson. I'm 17, a senior, and I intend to go into architecture sometime.
Thank you. And if the other page shows up, we will have them introduce themselves. This morning I want to make a note that we have two guest senators serving today. Senator Nezeba is filling in for Senator Heinert, and Senator Schoenbeck is here to replace Senator Ewing. So thanks, guys, for being here. Look forward to our meeting this morning. With that, we have a little bit of a procedural thing I think we're going to do. So, Senator Nostrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been in discussions with the Board of Regents and the sponsor of House Bill 1087, and they have asked us to allow them to have 48 hours to continue the communications and the debate and the negotiations. So I would like to make a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Well, preparatory remarks, but okay.
I'll allow it.
So
thank you.
So what was your motion then?
I would like to make a motion to reconsider the vote that House Bill 1087 was lost in the calendar, House Bill 1087, on Wednesday, March 6, 2019.
Second.
I have a motion by Senator Nostrup to remove 1087 and calendar it, and I have a second by Senator Langer. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, this is a roll call vote, so all those in favor of that motion will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Boland?
Pass.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Kennedy?
No.
Nezeba?
No.
Novstrup?
Aye.
Schoenbeck?
Aye.
Youngberg?
Aye.
Boland?
Aye.
Langer?
Aye.
Klum?
Aye.
7-2.
Motion passes 7-2. That will be removed from, it'll be reconsidered and placed on the calendar for Wednesday. With that, we'll move into our first bill on the agenda, 1093, establish legal standards applicable to petition challenges. With that proponent testimony, good morning, Representative Hansen.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Hansen. I'm from Del Rapids. I represent the greatest district in all of South Dakota.
No.
that's District 25, by the way.
From District 20, so I don't know.
That's right, yeah. I bring to you today House Bill 1093, an act to establish legal standards applicable to petition challenges. And it's a pretty short bill, and I think it's pretty simple, but I think it's pretty important. So because of that simplicity, we'll just walk through it together. Section 1, I think, is really a rule of law section. And by that, I mean, if you look at the existing language under 2-1-14 today, when you're considering challenges to petition signatures, the law today says all signatures secured in a manner contrary to the provisions of this chapter may not be counted. Well, there are some things, for example, if you receive compensation per signature, that's illegal under South Dakota law, but that's not codified in Section 2-1. So by making this change, what we're saying is it's the state's policy, I think it's fair to say that if a signature is gathered in violation of South Dakota law, we don't count that signature. This just picks up those other areas that aren't codified in 2-1, but makes a particular act illegal when it comes to getting that signature. That's Section 1. Section 2 and Section 3 I'll kind of talk about together. when a set of petitions are submitted to the Secretary of State's office, the Secretary of State receives those petitions and does a random sample. And it's a sample of about 700 signatures or so. And that sample is done to determine whether or not there's enough signatures that are valid to qualify the measure for the ballot. So it's as if you're taking a poll, I guess, of the signatures that have been submitted. It's a hyper oversample. You would not need to do nearly 700 signatures to get an accurate statistical measure of whether or not enough signatures have been submitted. In fact, on the national level, when we poll the country, I think we get about 1,000 signatures or so, maybe a little more. This is about 700, and that's just for signatures submitted for the ballot question, a much, much, much smaller pool. So that's our process. The petitions are submitted. The Secretary of State does a random sampling to determine whether enough signatures have been submitted that are valid to qualify for the ballot. And if there are enough valid signatures, then the Secretary of State says it's on the ballot. Okay, so now let's look at Section 2. Under the law today, the Secretary of State cannot make those petitions available to the public until after that random sampling process has occurred. That has made it difficult for members of the public to look at those petitions and to look at that sample to determine whether they believe that there's enough signatures that have been submitted that are valid. So Section 2 is really all about transparency, and it simply allows for the Secretary of State to release the petitions on the front end, release that sample on the front end rather than having to wait until that sample process has been completed. That's Section 2. Now, Section 3 deals with challenges to petitions. So under the law today, to challenge petitions, you would have to submit a challenge to a certain number of thousands and thousands of signatures. Now, that's just not what happens in practice. And I'll tell you, in my own personal experience, what happens is the parties generally stipulate to the court, and the court says, we're not going to look at all 20,000 or 30,000, however many signatures have been submitted, because to do that between the time that the action has been filed and the time that the ballots need to be printed is virtually impossible. Imagine having to depose thousands and thousands of people to determine whether or not those signatures are valid. So what the courts have been doing is saying, okay, we'll allow the parties to stipulate so that all that we're litigating is that statistically hyper-sampled Secretary of State sample. That's what you look at. That allows for parties in the litigation to narrow their focus on that oversampled population size to determine whether or not the measure, the proponents of the measure have submitted enough valid signatures. Without that stipulation in place, it's almost impossible for members of the public to look at these and determine whether or not enough valid signatures have been submitted. That's the common practice today. So Section 1 is about the rule of law. Section 2 is about transparency in the process. Section 3 is about codifying essentially what we do in practice today. The Attorney General's office came over and testified in favor of the bill on the House side. I know Charlie's busy in another committee today, so I'm not sure if he'll make it today, but I can relate to you that essentially his testimony was just that when it comes to Section 3 of the bill. Section 3 is simply codifying essentially what takes place in the courts today, narrowing these challenges to the Secretary of State's sample and nothing more. So that's the bill. I think it's important to our process, and I would ask for your favorable consideration of House Bill 1093. I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion, not discussion, probably testimony, proponent testimony on House Bill 1093? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Steve Barnett, Secretary of State. Just wanted to rise in support of this bill as well. It supports additional transparency and a clear and practical challenge process. I do want to thank Representative Hansen for doing the legwork on this. He's met with our office, and we do support the bill. So we appreciate your support on this. Thanks.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on 1093? Any further proponent testimony? Seeing none, is there any opponent testimony on House Bill 1093? Seeing none, we'll move to the committee questions. Senator Schoenbeck.
I've always been curious, and it relates to this. If I'll ask it, and I'm not sure which of the two proponents, but how do you read those names that people are putting to even decide if that's a name you can figure out where they live or who they are, if they're a voter? What's that process look like when they do these random samplings? If you get one of...
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Schoenbeck. Well, it does become difficult to read some of the names just because of the handwriting, you know, adds some difficulty. Maybe you could further clarify your question.
There's probably not. I've always wondered about it. I mean, you look at those petitions, people, I don't know how you can read somebody's name. And I wonder on these random samplings, what if you draw the name that looks like, blah. Anyway, if it's not that easy to answer, it doesn't matter. It doesn't.
Are you good?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I mean, the bottom line is sometimes you can't. If you can't, you know, people should be careful to write legibly because, you know, your address matters, your county matters, and if you don't write that legibly enough, then it's not going to count.
Senator Bolin.
Yeah, thank you. There's probably a question for either Secretary Barnett or his associate there. Can you kind of just run through this random sample? Do you take random sheets? Do you take different lines? How do you come to the how's the random sample generated, and how's that whole process work? I just kind of like to get some information on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member of the committee. My name is Kia Ward. I'm the director of the Division of Elections in the Secretary of State's office. For the random sample, we take each petition sheet. We have to scan it so it gets a number placed on it. And then when that whole batch of petitions for that measure is scanned, then we take those petitions and we create a spreadsheet, and we have to put in, like, let's say there was 2,088 sheets. We put 2,088 lines in a spreadsheet. Then we have to go back and look at each sheet to determine how many signature lines were actually completed on that petition. And then we enter a couple other lines to do the random sample. There's a function in Excel that you just do. We have a couple steps that lay out a process, and then you hit that function button, and it will tell you, like on the first signature line, it will say, pull petition number 2, sheet 2, and look at line 5. And then we go through the whole sheet, and we do that for every ballot measure. And that's how we determine which petition sheets and which signature lines that we actually go look up the voter registration on.
Follow up.
And then what's the reliability of this process? I mean, I think this was instituted 2 or 3 years ago. Can you make any comments just on the reliability of using this process to determine the validity of signatures?
Mr. Chair, we did talk with a statistician when we changed the random sample from the 5% to the current number that is now, and I can't remember that number. And the statistician said that it's a very solid number that we're using now to go through the process.
Then one other, how do other states handle this? I mean, do you have any information, say how this would work in Nebraska, North Dakota, any of the states bordering South Dakota? Do they use the same process we do, or are they doing it differently from the best of your knowledge?
I'm not aware of what other states do. We haven't really looked into that. When we changed it, we worked with a statistician who said that we used to just do a 5% random sample, and it still was the same process, putting it in the spreadsheet, hitting the function button to get the number and signatures that we have to validate. When former Secretary Krebs wanted to change it to a different percentage rate that we use, we did work with the statistician at NSU, and she said that it's a very valid and solid process that we have put in place.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Senator Nessebo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to follow up on the same line of reasoning to Ms. Warren. What happens if the random number generator gives you a blank entry on a sheet for a signature?
Mr. Chair.
Just how do you treat that?
There won't be a blank line because we don't count those in the when we put the numbers of completed lines in the spreadsheet. If it's a completely blank line or completely crossed out line, we don't count those. So we won't have those blank, that kind of issue won't show up.
And Mr. Chair, what would be the most common reasons for why a signature is rejected on a petition sheet?
The most common is there are 6 fields that every voter has to fill out on that signature line. If any one of those boxes is not complete, that throws out the signature line. If they list the wrong county that they're registered in, that will throw out the signature line. And those are the big two most common ones, is they don't fill in all the blanks and they put the wrong county of registration.
And then, Mr. Chair, what is the process by which a rejected signature can be reconsidered or be reevaluated again? What's the due process that those who brought the signatures could appeal that rejection?
Mr. Chair, a rejected petition that we find didn't meet the signature requirements, the only option is for someone to take that to court to try and get it put on the ballot.
And on what grounds would that decision be? It's suddenly the lawyers are in charge of the process here, and I'm not even sure how to write the question on what grounds would they make it. So if I guess I'll just leave it at that. They have the decision reviewed. Okay, great. Thank you very much. I do have another line of questioning, though.
What is Senator Greenfield first, and then we'll come back. Well,
just along those lines, though, the standard, legally speaking, is that the petition signatures are to be liberally construed, correct, to try to uphold the will of the people. So I think that the courts oftentimes are on the side of saying that it's a valid signature if there's something that can be proven to. I mean, if it's an illegible signature, but it probably it matches the person who lives in that residence at a particular address, I think they're going to err on the side of saying that it's a valid signature, correct?
Yes, that's both the case. And they do have a printed name that they have to print their name as well. And I know the question earlier was how do we look them up if both the printed name and signatures are unreadable. We have the option to drill down and search by address or just a zip code, and we can do further drilling down in our total vote system, which is our registration file, to try. We try as hard as we can to find the voter who signed that signature line.
Senator Nessebo.
Great. Thank you again, Mr. Chair, and thank you again, Ms. Warren. I want to talk about, and I exchanged emails with Christine in your office this morning, but I didn't quite get it resolved. I'm worried about a potential conflict between Section 2 and Section 3. So Section 2 says, would give the Secretary of State's office 30 days to respond to make public the random sample validation. But in Section 3, under Section 2-1-17.1, I think that there is a 30-day timeline. And what I'm curious about is when that 30-day timeline for a challenge begins. I just worry that if the challenge begins, are these concurrent or do they overlap between Section 2 and 3? And that might, if you can't answer that, maybe we'll have to go back to the prime sponsor.
Go ahead.
My understanding is that 30 days is when we receive the request for the copies of the petition. for the challenge. We have 30 days before we have to provide the information.
Mr. Chair, I remain confused.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Kennedy?
Maybe I can help. I'm looking at 2-1-17.1. And the first sentence says, not more than 30 days after a statewide petition for an initiated amendment to the Constitution, initiated measure, or referred law has been validated and filed, any interested person who has researched the signatures contained on the petition may submit a sworn affidavit to the Office of Secretary of State to challenge the petition. And I believe the question is, since 2-1-17.1 says you've got 30 days to file your petition to challenge, doesn't Section 2 of this bill, which gives you 30 days to submit the information which would support the challenge, don't the two kind of conflict with one another and perhaps overlap? I get it?
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Hansen, Representative Hansen, no promotion.
No, I'm not going to primary you, Senator. Mr. Chair, thanks for the question. I think it's a good one. So let's take a step back for a minute and think about how the process works. So right now the petitions are submitted to the Secretary of State's office, and the Secretary of State holds those and then does the sampling procedure.
I apologize. I have to go next door, so I'll rely on my colleagues
to
take my place.
Okay, thank you. So... All right. So right now, the way this process works is the petitions are submitted to the Secretary of State's office. The Secretary of State has those petitions and does the sampling process. And under the statute that was cited by Senator Kennedy, those petitions are held in the office, and nobody can look at those petitions until the Secretary of State certifies and files. So that's under the law today when those petitions become public. So in that window, there's no option for anybody to look at those petitions. That's the law today. What this is doing is allowing somebody to look at those petitions and look at the sample before the petitions are certified and filed. So, by the way, there's no time frame prescribed in law right now. So if you request these after they've been certified and filed, the Secretary of State has been very good about getting those back to you in extremely short order. So what we're really looking at in Section 2 is before the measure has been certified and filed. We can't look at the petitions during that time today, but we can if this bill is passed and Section 2 becomes law. Did I answer that okay?
I think I'm getting there, Mr. Chair. And so my question is, if the Secretary of State's office has been returning those in sometimes in as little as a week or 2 weeks, why do we need that 30-day on there? I fear that it might actually create an incentive for them to not be as responsive and as good as they have been, that they could actually sit on it for a longer period of time, stretching out this process.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nesba. Well, that's a great question again. What we're trying to allow for in the 30-day window is for the Secretary of State to generate that sample. Because, like I said earlier, right now you can only get these petitions and that sample once they've actually conducted the sample and determined whether the measure has got enough valid signatures or not. So, you know, I don't want to step on the Secretary of State's toes here because they've been very good to work with in this regard. But, you know, if they felt like 14 days was enough or 15 days or 20 days was enough to generate that random sample, I would certainly be amenable to that.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langer.
Mr. Chair, I would move do pass on House Bill 1093.
Motion by Senator Langer, do pass. Seconded by Senator Youngberg. Any discussion on that motion?
No.
No discussion. Any other further discussion? Seeing none, the motion is do pass on 1093. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Boland?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Kennedy? Excused. Nezeba?
No.
Nordstrom?
Aye.
Schoenbeck?
Aye.
Youngberg?
Aye.
Langer?
Aye.
Klum?
Aye.
7-1.
Motion passes. Moving on, House Bill 1189. Provide for a period to cure certain campaign finance violations. Representative Gosch, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Fine members of the committee, Representative Gosch, District 23, Glenham, South Dakota. I bring you the easiest bill all year. I think it's a good common sense bill. You guys have never heard any of those words yet, I'm sure. The bill in front of you is, as I look around the committee, I see teaching licenses, law licenses, even pest control licenses. driver's licenses, but real estate licenses. When we come into office, we try to do what's right for the state of South Dakota. Well, with all of the campaign regulations onto us, it is riddled with Class 2 misdemeanors throughout the way. There have been certain instances that I've been trying not to point on exactly or precisely throughout the time. But what this bill does is, in the event that you are, most of our, as you guys can testify to, most of our violations are mere accidents. You didn't sign on the right line. You didn't put a disclaimer. You didn't do, you know, something pretty easy. What this bill does is it allows you a 7-day window to be able to ratify the problem before you're charged with a misdemeanor. Simple as that. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1189. Any further testimony? Seeing none. Any opponent testimony? I'm looking at the very few people in this room who can possibly testify, and they're not moving. So, with no opponent testimony, we'll waive rebuttal. Any questions for the sponsor? Senator Boland.
Thank you. A question for the prime sponsor. So, Mr. Chair, so if you were, had a campaign violation, you didn't put your disclaimers on your equipment, on your signs or whatever, you're a first-time candidate, and you just made a mistake. So who, you eventually were charged with this Class 2 misdemeanor. Who does that charging? I mean, does this come from the local sheriff or the secretary? Who does the charging on this?
Mr. Chair. Again, Representative Gosch, District 23. The way I understand it is the complaint is filed with the Secretary of State's office and is then turned over to the Attorney General, and then they continue through the process.
So just to follow up on my – so this basically – this is a charge that comes from state officials to the candidate running for a particular office. It's not like the local sheriff – arrest you or something like that, or it's comes from that. Okay, thanks,
Mr. Chair. Yeah, I to add to your point, yeah, I believe they will use local resources to notify, but you're right.
Further questions? Senator Nesteva.
Just one, Mr. Chair. Can you give me an example of how this might be applied or what you had in mind when you drafted the bill?
Mr. Chair, again, you know, if you go into 1227, the biggest thing we've had, we can give you an example of certain things that have happened over the past. I'm trying to stay, if it's okay, I'm trying to stay out of the political ramifications of either side, Democrat, Republican, so on and so forth, of stories that have gone on. These things have happened. Individuals have been charged with Class 2 misdemeanors, and we're trying to get to the point where, again, they're usually easily fixed, whether it's a disclaimer on your sign or whatnot. They're usually an easy fix that could be done, and you being a professional, those Class 2 misdemeanors continue to rack up and could challenge your license, your professional license and your professional career, what pertains to you being part of the civil legislature that we have here today. So that's where the idea came from, is they continue to stack up, and we get into these instances where you know, are these things an easy fix?
Any further questions?
No further questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, do I have a motion? Senator Boland?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move due pass on this particular piece of legislation.
I have a motion due pass by Senator Boland, second by Senator Langer. Any comments on your motion?
Yes, I would like to make very few comments. You know, I'm aware of people who are, you know, we are a citizen legislator. Yes, some of us have more experience than others, but a lot of people are recruited to run for these offices. There's probably more than, I would believe, more than half of the legislators here were are individuals who were encouraged by someone else to run for a particular purpose, you know, for, with a, they thought might you had skills or this or that to be involved in the process up here. And It's very common that there are, especially these disclaimers are left off of pieces of literature. Occasionally I had a gentleman who a number of years ago printed some stuff for me and he forgot the, disclaimer. Basically we had to throw all the stuff away. I mean, I caught it and we had to throw the stuff away. And it was, you know, those are things that just happen. And when we can have something like this that I think makes sense for South Dakota, give you 7 days to, I think the language in the bill says cure the mistake or whatever that is. I think that's a very, that's legitimate. It's not, we're not trying to, you know, engage in, again, nefarious activities, but just to somebody, especially early, young candidates, people with, I use the term inexperienced candidates who are recruited to run, let's give them a break. That's my thought on this. We're not, you know, if you get a week, if after a week, if you haven't got it taken care of, then it happens. But, that's my thoughts. This is a reasonable piece of legislation for the great state of South Dakota. I'd urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion, Senator Schoenbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We actually had this happen up in our area, and this is a good bill because here's how it happens. Some Nimrod is mad because they see some minuscule thing and they file a complaint with the Secretary of State who then sends it to the DCI. Now the DCI is calling this candidate to say, we heard that your hand painted signs, somebody didn't paint paid for on the bottom of these hand painted signs from a prior election. And, I mean, the complaint was garbage, and that took state resources, and we're shed. Here's a candidate, and we're trying to recruit people to run, and now you're being investigated as a criminal, where if you get a little bit of notice, you can go out and have your wife paint the disclaimer on, just like she painted the rest of the sign, if it's that important to the person that had nothing else to do but complain, apparently. This is a good bill.
Thank you. Further discussions on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Boland?
Aye.
Greenfield? Excused. Kennedy? Excused. Nezeba?
Aye.
Novstrup?
Aye.
Schoenbeck?
Aye.
Youngberg?
Aye.
Langer?
Aye.
Klum?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Motion passes unanimously.
Move consent.
We have a motion by consent from Senator Langer, second by Senator Boland. All those in favor say aye. Okay, motion will go on consent. That concludes our agenda for today. So I look for a motion. Senator Langer moves to adjourn. Second by Senator Youngberg. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.